Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Monday, November the 22nd, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat...
The United States, as the world knows, will never start a war.
JFK got that wrong. That was John Fitzgerald Kennedy, President of the United States, on June the 10th, 1963, during his commencement speech at American University. It was a speech that was known as the Peace Speech. Sadly, just 5.5 months after he gave that speech, JFK would be assassinated during a motorcade ride in Dallas, Texas. On this edition of the Politocrat, a look at the American University speech and, of course, the reality that John F. Kennedy got that wrong about America never wanting to start a war or never starting one. The focus, though, will be the speech on this sad day. That's coming up. Next. Dear listener, welcome back, and thank you very much for being here on the Politocrat Daily Podcast with me. I am Omar Moore, and you are a loyal and respected and treasured listener to this podcast. And I thank you very much for your time, dear listener. Honestly, this is... truly appreciated. Appreciated. I know that these are tough times now for perhaps yourself and for many people because we're going into the holiday season now. And of course, Thanksgiving in the United States is coming up later this week. And it will be a time for some people that is not one to be thankful for, pardon me. And it's going to be a challenge for some people. It's going to be a challenge for many people. Many people don't have a roof over their head. Many people don't have food. Many people have lost their jobs and still have not been able to get one because, you know, their industry has been particularly hard hit. There are people in corporate sectors who are making choices. And unfortunately, as a result of that, or even in other sectors around the place, the job that you may have had 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, is no longer yours because it is gone. And that breeds tremendous anxiety, tremendous depression, quite frankly, because that would depress people, anybody. And the other thing is that you feel isolated. You feel that you're a little bit worthless, perhaps. You feel that you're not with the rest of everybody. And you see people walking past you, going to work or whatever, and then you're there and you're like, oh my goodness, you know, I don't have a job or something else. A lot of people are going through that at the moment and have been going through it before the pandemic began, and they're certainly going through it now during this pandemic, which continues on. So I do hope, dear listener, that if that applies to you, that you find your way through and you are able to get back to or get a little closer toward the destiny and the direction you want to go in. That means also, of course, having a treasured and priceless thing called a job, because lots of people don't have that. Lots of people go through this time of year, and it's especially difficult, or there's a health situation, and maybe you don't have that support network. Maybe you don't have it. Maybe you don't have that person or persons in your life that you can call on. Maybe you're someone who's been cast out as a pariah in your family, and you don't have the luxury of going back and saying, hey, mom, hey, dad, hey, whomever, you know, I need some help here, because they won't listen to you now. They have cast you out. So if that applies to you, dear listener, or if that applies to someone you know, dear listener, please spare a thought for them and help them out, you know. Give them a semblance of comfort. In these days and in this age, it's difficult. And it's one of those things that particularly people in this particular type of position get reminded of and amplified, an amplified reminder of at this time of year. So if you see someone in need, whether it's now or any time during the year, and you have it in your heart to dig into your pockets and give them some money, buy them some food, whatever it might be to comfort them and to tell them, hey, look, I see you. Won't you please do that? Thank you. Dear listener, again, I do appreciate you, and thanks again for listening. Today's episode is a solemn one, because on this day, 58 years ago, John Fitzgerald Presley... It's not... Oh, dear. Let me start that again, shall I? I'm not going to edit myself here. I'm not going to redo. Just to show you that this is an unscripted podcast. 58 years ago today, President John Fitzgerald Kennedy was assassinated during a motorcade through the streets of Dallas, Texas. It was a horrible day. It was an unforgettable day. A mournful day for the United States of America. John Fitzgerald Kennedy had only been in office, literally had only been in office, for under 3 years. And during that time, he had been a very key figure in averting the Cuban Missile Crisis and ending it, along with the help of people on the opposite side of that crisis, of course, and other people that I've not mentioned. Now, that was one of, I would say, arguably, Kennedy's biggest honors or biggest accomplishments, was to avert the end of this planet as we know it. Yes, there were plans drawn up for Vietnam, or they were in the works. Yes, it was dubious at best around whether or not Kennedy wanted that war. And some people will say he didn't. Some people will say, well, on the other hand, there were things that Kennedy did do to try to prevent escalation of conflict. And then there were things perhaps that maybe he didn't do enough of. You can ask Robert McNamara about that. Well, no longer can you. He is no longer here. But Robert McNamara, his defense secretary, talked a lot about this and other things in the documentary The Fog of War, which is directed by Errol Morris. I've had Errol Morris on this podcast in 2020 to talk about another film that he directed. But on this episode, I want to turn again to John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the Democrat who became president, the first Catholic president that the United States has ever had. The current president, Joe Biden, is the second Catholic president that the United States has had. John Kennedy was someone who had a sense of leadership and was clear on the way he wanted the world to be, where the way he wanted America to be. And what I'm going to do on this episode, dear listener, is play you half of, just half, just over half, of the 27-minute speech that John F. Kennedy gave at American University on June the 10th, 1963. It is known in some circles as the peace speech. I'm going to play for you the first 14 minutes, and it's going to be very interesting, and I would like you to think about, as you listen to JFK speaking, how much of what he said is true today in 2021 and beyond, and how much of what he has said is not true in this day and time. How much of what JFK said then, are we so very far away from in this day and age? And the other thing I want to say to you is, I want you to note the two people, there's two people that he mentions in this speech. And they are mentioned fairly early on, and they are avowed racists. You will hear JFK reference Bob Byrd. And that is the same Bob Byrd, Robert Byrd, who was the Grand Wizard of the KKK at one point in a chapter wherever in the South. Robert Byrd was a senator who was from West Virginia. That's who he represented. That's the state he represented. And he was an avowed racist, Klansman. He would later renounce his membership in the Klan. But at the time in 1963, Robert Byrd was very much a Dixiecrat at best. And certainly somebody who did not care for black people. Let's put it that way, at the very, very least. JFK will mention his name and do so in the context of a joke. And the other person, the other racist he will mention is none other than Woodrow Wilson, a previous president of the United States. He was one of the presidents who screened the D.W. Griffith film, Birth of a Nation, the 1915 film, in the White House. Interesting that JFK mentions both of those two people near the very beginning of his speech. This is indeed a sad day, 58 years ago today. And if you are someone who was alive back then, think about where you were when you heard the news that President John Fitzgerald Kennedy was assassinated. What I'm going to do now, dear listener, is play uninterrupted the first 14 minutes of the famed commencement speech that JFK gave at American University. Here now, without any further ado, are those first 14 minutes of a speech delivered on June the 10th, 1963.
President Edison, members of the faculty, Board of Trustees, distinguished guests, my old colleague, Senator Bob Byrd, who has earned his degree through many years of attending Knight Law School, while I am earning mine in the next 30 minutes, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pride that I participate in this ceremony of the American University, sponsored by the Methodist Church, founded by Bishop John Fletcher Hurst, and first opened by President Woodrow Wilson in 1914. This is a young and growing university, but it has already fulfilled Bishop Hurst's enlightened hope for the study of history and public affairs in a city devoted to the making of history and to the conduct of the public's business. By sponsoring this institution of higher learning, for all who wish to learn, whatever their color or their creed, the Methodists of this area and the nation deserve the nation's thanks. And I commend all those who are today graduating. Professor Woodrow Wilson once said that every man sent out from a university should be a man of his nation, as well as a man of his time. And I'm confident that the men and women who carry the honor of graduating from this institution will continue to give from their lives, from their talents, a high measure of public service and public support. There are few earthly things more beautiful than a university, wrote John Masefield in his tribute to English universities, and his words are equally true today. He did not refer to towers or to campuses. He admired the splendid beauty of a university because it was, he said, a place where those who hate ignorance may strive to know, where those who perceive truth may strive to make others see. I have therefore chosen this time and place to discuss a topic on which ignorance too often abounds and the truth too rarely perceived, and that is the most important topic on earth, peace. What kind of a peace do I mean, and what kind of a peace do we seek? not a Pax Americana, enforced on the world by American weapons of war, not the peace of the grave or the security of the slave. I am talking about genuine peace, the kind of peace that makes life on earth worth living, the kind that enables men and nations to grow and to hope and build a better life for their children. Not merely peace for Americans, but peace for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, but peace in all time. I speak of peace because of the new face of war. Total war makes no sense in an age where great powers can maintain large and relatively invulnerable nuclear forces and refuse to surrender without resort to those forces. It makes no sense in an age where a single nuclear weapon contains almost 10 times the explosive force delivered by all the Allied air forces in the Second World War. It makes no sense in an age when the deadly poisons produced by a nuclear exchange would be carried by wind and water and soil and seed to the far corners of the globe and to generations yet unborn. Today, the expenditure of billions of dollars every year on weapons acquired for the purpose of making sure we never need them is essential to the keeping of peace. But surely the acquisition of such idle stockpiles, which can only destroy and never create, is not the only, much less the most efficient, means of assuring peace. I speak of peace, therefore, as the necessary rational end of rational men. I realize the pursuit of peace is not as dramatic as the pursuit of war, and frequently the words of the pursuers fall on deaf ears, but we have no more urgent task. Some say that it is useless to speak of peace or world law or world disarmament, and that it will be useless until the leaders of the Soviet Union adopt a more enlightened attitude. I hope they do. I believe we can help them do it. But I also believe that we must re-examine our own attitudes as individuals and as a nation. For our attitude is as essential as theirs. And every graduate of this school, every thoughtful citizen who despairs of war and wishes to bring peace, should begin by looking inward, by examining his own attitude towards the possibilities of peace, towards the Soviet Union, towards the course of the Cold War, and towards freedom and peace here at home. First, examine our attitude towards peace itself. Too many of us think it is impossible. Too many think it is unreal. But that is a dangerous, defeatist belief. It leads to the conclusion that war is inevitable, that mankind is doomed, that we are gripped by forces we cannot control. We need not accept that view. Our problems are man-made. Therefore, they can be solved by man, and man can be as big as he wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings. Man's reason and spirit have often solved the seemingly unsolvable, and we believe they can do it again. I am not referring to the absolute, infinite concept of universal peace and goodwill, of which some fantasies and fanatics dream. I do not deny the value of hopes and dreams, but we merely invite discouragement and incredulity by making that our only and immediate goal. Let us focus instead on a more practical, more attainable peace, based not on a sudden revolution in human nature, but on a gradual evolution in human institutions, on a series of concrete actions and effective agreements which are in the interests of all concerned. There is no single simple key to this peace.
No grand or magic formula to be adopted by one or two powers. Genuine peace must be the product of many nations, the sum of many acts. It must be dynamic, not static, changing to meet the challenge of each new generation. For peace is a process, a way of solving problems. With such a peace, there will still be quarrels and conflicting interests, as there are within families and nations. World peace, like community peace, does not require that each man love his neighbor. It requires only that they live together in mutual tolerance, submitting their disputes to a just and peaceful settlement. And history teaches us that enmities between nations, as between individuals, do not last forever. However fixed our likes and dislikes may seem, the tide of time and events will often bring surprising changes in the relations between nations and neighbors. So let us persevere. Peace need not be impractical, and war need not be inevitable. By defining our goal more clearly, by making it seem more manageable and less remote, we can help all people to see it, to draw hope from it, and to move irresistibly towards it. And second, let us re-examine our attitude towards the Soviet Union. It is discouraging to think that their leaders may actually believe what their propagandists write. It is discouraging to read a recent authoritative Soviet text on military strategy and find on page after page wholly baseless and incredible claims, such as the allegation that American imperialist circles are preparing to unleash different types of war, that there is a very real threat of a preventative war being unleashed by American imperialists against the Soviet Union, and that the political aims, and I quote, of the American imperialists are to enslave economically and politically the European and other capitalist countries and to achieve world domination by means of aggressive war, unquote. Truly, as it was written long ago, the wicked flee when no man pursueth. Yet it is sad to read these Soviet statements to realize the extent of the gulf between us. But it is also a warning to the American people not to fall into the same trap as the Soviets, not to see only a distorted and desperate view of the other side, not to see conflict as inevitable, accommodation as impossible, and communication as nothing more than an exchange of threats. No government or social system is so evil that its people must be considered as lacking in virtue. As Americans, we find communism profoundly repugnant as a negation of personal freedom and dignity. But we can still hail the Russian people for their many achievements in science and space, in economic and industrial growth, in culture, in acts of courage. Among the many traits the peoples of our two countries have in common, none is stronger than our mutual abhorrence of war. Almost unique, among the major world powers, we have never been at war with each other. And no nation in the history of battle ever suffered more than the Soviet Union in the Second World War. At least 20 million lost their lives. Countless millions of homes and families were burned or sacked. A third of the nation's territory, including two-thirds of its industrial base, was turned into a wasteland. A loss equivalent to the destruction of this country east of Chicago. Today, should total war ever break out again, no matter how, our two countries will be the primary target. It is an ironic but accurate fact that the two strongest powers are the two in the most danger of devastation. All we have built, all we have worked for, would be destroyed in the first 24 hours. And even in the Cold War, which brings burdens and dangers to so many countries, including this nation's closest allies, our two countries bear the heaviest burdens. For we are both devoting massive sums of money to weapons that could be better devoted to combat ignorance, poverty, and disease. We are both caught up in a vicious and dangerous cycle, with suspicion on one side breeding suspicion on the other, and new weapons begetting counterweapons. In short, both the United States and its allies, and the Soviet Union and its allies, have a mutually deep interest in a just and genuine peace and in halting the arms race. Agreements to this end are in the interests of the Soviet Union as well as ours. And even the most hostile nations can be relied upon to accept and keep those treaty obligations, and only those treaty obligations, which are in their own interest. So let us not be blind to our differences, but let us also direct attention to our common interests and the means by which those differences can be resolved. And if we cannot end now our differences, at least we can help make the world safe for diversity.
So that was John F. Kennedy, you heard before the break there, with 14 minutes, the first 14 minutes of a 27-minute speech during a commencement at American University. And it was a famed speech at the time, and it's now only grown in significance since the assassination of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, which occurred 58 years ago today. It shocked the nation and absolutely rocked the world. This horrible event that happened, it was caught all on videotape, on the film actually, excuse me, the Zapruder film. And look, I'm not going to talk in any detail at all about the end of Kennedy's life. And it was so public, it was so violent, it was so brutal. And we can go to all kinds of sources to find out and watch and look at that. I mean, I don't really care to watch it anymore. I've seen that Zapruder film a billion times. I mean, if you look at the film JFK, the Oliver Stone movie, it repeats it in relentless detail and close up too. It's just, look, I don't need to be seeing that a billion times. I would rather ask you, dear listener, if you were alive when that happened, if you were around, if you were old enough, I should say, to be aware of where you were. I'm sure you do. I think pretty much everyone does. I mean, you don't forget when something like that happens, just like you don't forget when September 11th, 2001 happens. You don't forget when John Lennon got assassinated. You don't forget when Dr. King got assassinated, when Malcolm X got assassinated, when Medgar Evers got assassinated. You don't forget any of those things, right? You don't. You don't forget what happened, you know, the time when Ronald Reagan was, there was an assassination attempt on his life. You don't forget any of these things. I'm just offering some recent history, and the mood of the country was, it was a great deal of trepidation, because that speech that you just heard 14 minutes of before the break was given at a time that, you know, we were less than a year away from, or a year after, the averting of what would have been the end of this planet as we know it. None of us would be here had it not been for the end that was put to that Cuban Missile Crisis in October of 1962. 13 days in October of that year, 62. And the 60s were one heck of a decade, that's for sure. The most turbulent decade, arguably, in the history of the world. I could say the 1930s were obviously as well, and 40s, but I should say the 60s were one. I shouldn't say it was the most, but it is one of the most. And I still say that 1968 itself is indeed, and was indeed, probably the single most turbulent year, single year, in terms of the most consequential year in this country's history, not in the world history, but in this country's history, because you had so many people getting assassinated, at least two very noteworthy people, Dr. King in April of that year, and of course, JFK's brother Robert, RFK, being assassinated 2 months after. And what really caught my eye, when I remember the speech being dated June the 10th of 1963 for JFK at American University that you just heard, is that precisely almost exactly 5 years after he gave that speech, his brother would be assassinated here in California. June the 6th would be the day that he would pass. He was shot, I believe, on June the 5th, 1968. So it was almost exactly 5 years to the day. And it just makes you wonder. It just really does. It's just very sad. The Kennedys, though, you know, there's all kinds of things about the Kennedys that some of those things are very good and some of them not so. And I don't want to really go into detail about that. I have talked about that in various situations on this podcast. But for me, on this particular episode, it is a day to consider where we are as a country. As you heard JFK giving half of that speech, at least half that I played you. He gave a full 27-minute speech, but I wanted to play you the half that I played you, the first half, and also the excerpt that you heard earlier, which is in the second half of the speech where he says, America will never start a war. Oh, dearie me, how that did not age very well. Oh, gosh. I wonder if JFK were alive now, what he would have thought about what he said in 1963. It's unfair in a way to even be posing that question, but you can't help but think about how strikingly opposite to the reality we are in when you hear that now. And it's not a portion of the American University speech that often gets played. It doesn't get played. And certainly the corporate news media doesn't play it. But what we have turned into is exactly what Eisenhower, who gave his farewell address just minutes or just a day or two before JFK would take office at the White House in 1961. His farewell address where Eisenhower said, you know, what we must guard against, and I'm paraphrasing now, is the influence, whether sought or unsought, of the military-industrial complex. We must never let the weight of this burden overwhelm us or overcome us. I'm just paraphrasing there. But that's almost what he said. I mean, he warned about this military-industrial complex. And as I listened to that 14 minutes of the 27-minute speech that we've just listened to together, dear listener, I really thought about Eisenhower, what Eisenhower said, and also Kennedy's words about a Pax Americana. We don't want a Pax Americana, he said, forced on the world. We don't want that. That's not the peace that we seek. We seek a world where people can live peacefully and coexist together freely without violence, without bloodshed. And yes, we have our differences, but we should be able to live peaceably and peacefully with our differences. Unfortunately, that is not the world we are living in now. And the brutal reality is, dear listener, is that they, and you can imagine who they are, wanted a Pax Americana. And quite frankly, with the assassination of JFK, they got their Pax Americana. And ever since that speech in June of 63, ever since the horrible assassination in November of 63, November 22nd, 1963, ever since then, it's been a Pax Americana. It's been about America enforcing its weight and its will on everybody else across the globe, being the world's policeman, the world's superpower. But the thing is, this country's so-called superpower status is very weakened at the moment. And I just think of some of the things that JFK said in that speech about the Soviet Union and America's this and that, and we're not this or we're not that, and the Soviet people mean well and they're not this and that. And I just think of what's going on now with Putin, what's going on now with Russia, what's going on now with Belarus, what's going on now with some of the violent situations we have on this planet, what's going on now, in the White House, with someone who has already, in his first 10 months in office, dropped bombs on civilians in Syria and in Afghanistan. Democratic president. We have paxed the heck out of Americana forever. That's what we've done. And JFK's words, it's sad to hear them in a way now, because, wow, he sounds idealist next to people like, well, me, maybe you, dear listener. And I'm not saying that Kennedy was the best thing since sliced bread. He certainly wasn't. He was slow to civil rights. He was slow to all kinds of things. But he was not, one of them was not women. He was not slow to women at all. And JFK, who I think, again, would have probably won a second term in office, was sadly and cruelly cheated out of completing even his first term in office. And thus we started to see the changes in this country and in the way it did things and in the world itself. And it became an unforgettably turbulent decade. There have been assassinations all around the world, by the way, of leaders. And some of that was committed by the United States. In fact, I said since that speech, heck, the United States was doing this before that speech by Kennedy in 63. You look at Patrice Lumumba in the Belgian Congo on the African continent. There's more than enough ample evidence to show that the United States and the British Secret Service were completely involved in the assassination of Patrice Lumumba. The CIA and the MI5 of England is very, very clear. This is not even a question. And look, this has been going on for so long now, and it's just sad. It's just to see at least at the bare minimum it's sad. So I just wanted to reflect on that a little bit. There were some other things in that speech I found to be stirring, but again, also sad because JFK is not here. And the Kennedys have really been a family marred by tragedy and scandal and, quite frankly, a few criminal elements too. That is the family, and they've helped a lot of people too, and they have participated in things like the Special Olympics, and they've done a lot of public service work, which is something to be commended. And I wonder what JFK would be thinking about where we are right now. I'm sure he would have enforced the mask mandates or would have said something about them. On the federal level, at least. And I'm sure that he would have spoken out about things like this. But again, we will never know now. It's so sad to know that this is the 58-year mark, exactly 58 years ago today, that President John Fitzgerald Kennedy was assassinated. It was horrible. And we are living in a very violent time now, a very violent climate. And, hope that you are safe and well, dear listener, and that those around you are safe. We need a safer society. We need a more caring, more empathetic society. And as JFK says, we need a far more peaceful society and a peaceful world. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.
For president who's seasoned through and through, but not so doggone seasoned that he won't try something new. A man who's old enough to know
and young enough to do.
Well, it's up to you, it's up to you,
it's strictly up to you.
But it's Kennedy, 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 Kennedy,
Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy.
Do you want a man with spirit who is not afraid to fight?
A man whose record shows that he will fight for what is right.
A loyal man who'll bring the job a fresh new point of view.
Well, it's up to you, it's up to you,
it's strictly up to you.
Cause it's Kennedy, 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 Kennedy,
Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy.
And do you deny to any man the right why he's guaranteed to be elected president, no matter what his creed.
It's promised in the Bill of Rights to which we must be true.
So it's up to you, it's up to you.
It's strictly up to you.
And it's Kennedy, 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 Kennedy for me.
Do you like a man who answers straight, a man who's always fair?
We'll measure him against the others, and when you compare, you cast your vote for Kennedy, and a change that's overdue.
So it's up to you, it's up to you, it's strictly up to you. Yes, it's Kennedy, 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 Kennedy.